broidered in pale green, but his cloak was fastened with a silver trout. River Run's captain of guards. In his day, Sir Robin Reiger had been a notably tenacious fighter, but his day was done. He was of an age with Hoster Tully, and had grown old with his lord. When the boats were 50 yards apart, Jamie cupped his hands around his mouth and shouted back over the water, "Come to wish me Godspeed, Sir Robin." "Come to take you back, Kingslayer," Sir Robin Reiger bellowed. "How is it that you've lost your golden hair?" "I hope to blind my enemies with the sheen off my head. It's worked well enough for you." Sir Robin was unamused. The distance between skiff and galley had shrunk to 40 yards. "Throw your oars and your weapons into the river, and no one need be harmed." Sir Cleos twisted around. "Jamie, tell him we were freed by Lady Catelyn, an exchange of captives, lawful." Jamie told him, for all the good it did. "Catelyn Stark does not rule in River Run," Sir Robin shouted back. Four archers crowded into position on either side of him, two standing and two kneeling. "Cast your swords into the water." "I have no sword," he returned, "but if I did, I'd stick it through your belly and hack the balls off those four cravens." A flight of arrows answered him. One thudded into the mast, two pierced the sail, and the fourth missed Jamie by a foot. Another of the red fork's broad loops loomed before them. Bryene angled the skiff across the bend. The yards swung as they turned, their sail cracking as it filled with wind. Ahead, a large island sat in midstream. The main channel flowed right. To the left, a cut-off ran between the island and the high bluffs of the north shore. Bryene moved the tiller, and the skiff sheered left, sail rippling. Jamie watched her eyes. "Pretty eyes," he thought, "and calm." He knew how to read a man's eyes. He knew what fear looked like. She is determined, not desperate. 30 yards behind, the galley was entering the bend. "Sir Cleos, take the tiller," the wench commanded. "Kingslayer, take an oar and keep us off the rocks." "As my lady commands." An oar was not a sword, but the blade could break a man's face if well swung, and the shaft could be used to parry. Sir Cleos shoved the oar into Jamie's hand and scrambled aft. They crossed the head of the island and turned sharply down the cut-off, sending a wash of water against the face of the bluff as the boat tilted. The island was densely wooded, a tangle of willows, oaks, and tall pines that cast deep shadows across the rushing waters, hiding snags and the rotting trunks of drowned trees. To their left, the bluff rose sheer and rocky, and at its foot, the river foamed whitely around broken boulders and tumbles of rock fallen from the cliff face. They passed from sunlight into shadow, hidden from the galley's view between the green wall of the trees and the stony grey-brown bluff. "A few moments' respite from the arrows," Jamie thought, pushing them off a half-submerged boulder. The skiff rocked. He heard a soft splash, and when he glanced around, Bryene was gone. A moment later he spied her again, pulling herself from the water at the base of the bluff. She waded through a shallow pool, scrambled over some rocks, and began to climb. Sir Cleos goggled, mouth open. "Fool," thought Jamie. "Ignore the wench," he snapped at his cousin. "Steer!" They could see the sail moving behind the trees. The river galley came into full view at the top of the cut-off, 25 yards behind. Her bow swung hard as she came around, and a half-dozen arrows took flight, but all went well wide. The motion of the two boats was giving the archers difficulty, but Jamie knew they'd soon learn to compensate. Bryene was halfway up the cliff face, pulling herself from handhold to handhold. "Reiger's sure to see her, and once he does, he'll have those bowmen bring her down." Jamie decided to see if the old man's pride would make him stupid. "Sir Robin," he shouted, "hear me for a moment." Sir Robin raised a hand. and his archers lowered their bows. "Say what you will, Kingslayer, but say it quickly." The skiff swung through a litter of broken stones as Jamie called out, "I know a better way to settle this. Single combat, you and I." "I was not born this morning, Lannister." "No, but you'll like to die this afternoon." Jamie raised his hand so the other could see the manacles. "I'll fight you in chains. What could you fear?" "Not you, sir. If the choice were mine, I'd like nothing better, but I am commanded to bring you back alive, if possible. Bowman," he signalled them on, "notch, draw, loop." The range was less than 20 yards. The archers could scarcely have missed, but as they pulled on their longbows, a rain of pebbles cascaded down around them. Small stones rattled on their deck, bounced off their helms, and made splashes on both sides of the bow. Those who had the wits enough to understand raised their eyes just as a boulder the size of a cow detached itself from the top of the bluff. Sir Robin shouted in dismay. The stone tumbled through the air, struck the face of the cliff, cracked in two, and smashed down on them. The larger piece snapped the mast, tore through the sail, sent two of the archers flying into the river, and crushed the leg of a rower as he bent over his oar. The rapidity with which the galley began to fill with water suggested that the smaller fragment had punched right through her hull. The oarsmen's screams echoed off the bluff while the archers flailed wildly in the current. From the way they were splashing, neither man could swim. Jamie laughed. By the time they emerged from the cut-off, the galley was foundering amongst pools, eddies, and snags, and Jamie Lannister had decided that the guards were good. Sir Robin and his thrice-damned archers would have a long, wet walk back to Riverrun, and he was rid of the big, homely wench as well. "I could not have planned it better myself, once I am free of these irons." Sir Cleos raised a shout. When Jamie looked up, Bryeen was lumbering across the clifftop well ahead of them, having cut across a finger of land while they were following the bend in the river. She threw herself off the rock and looked almost graceful as she folded into a dive. It would have been ungracious to hope that she would smash her head on a stone. Sir Cleos turned the skiff toward her. Thankfully, Jamie still had his oar. "One good swing when she comes paddling up, and I'll be free of her." Instead, he found himself stretching the oar out over the water. Bryeen grabbed hold, and Jamie pulled her in. As he helped her into the skiff, water ran from her hair and dripped from her sodden clothing to a pool on the deck. "She is even uglier wet. Who would have thought it possible?" "You're a bloody stupid wench," he told her. "We could have sailed on without you. I suppose you expect me to thank you." "I want none of your thanks, Kingslayer. I swore an oath to bring you safe to King's Landing." "And you actually mean to keep it?" Jamie gave her his brightest smile. "Now, there's a wonder."
In the morning he woke to the sound of a cock crowing. Egg was still there, curled up beneath the old man's second-best cloak. Well, the boy did not run off during the night. That's a start. He prodded him awake with his foot. "Up, there's work to do." The boy rose quick enough, rubbing his eyes. "Help me saddle Sweetfoot," Dunk told him. "What about breakfast?" "There's salt beef. After we're done." "I'd sooner eat the horse," Egg said. "Sir, you'll eat my fist if you don't do as you're told. Get the brushes. They're in the saddle sack. Yes, that one." Together they brushed out the palfrey's sorrel coat, hefted Sir Arlen's best saddle over her back, and cinched it tight. Egg was a good worker once he put his mind to it, Dunk saw. "I expect I'll be gone most of the day," he told the boy as he mounted. "You're to stay here and put the camp in order. Make sure no other thieves come nosing about." "Can I have a sword to run them off with?" Egg asked. He had blue eyes, Dunk saw, very dark, almost purple, His bald head made them seem huge somehow. No, said Dunk. A knife's enough, and you had best be here when I come back, do you hear me? Rob me and run off, and I'll hunt you down, I swear I will, with dogs.
You don't have any dogs,
Egg pointed out.
I'll get some, said Dunk, just for you.
He turned Sweetfoot's head toward the meadow and moved off at a brisk trot, hoping the threat would be enough to keep the boy honest. Save for the clothes on his back, the armor in his sack, and the horse beneath him, everything Dunk owned in the world was back at that camp.
I am a great fool to trust the boy so far, but it is no more than the old man did for me, he reflected.
The mother must have sent him to me so that I could pay my debt. As he crossed the field, he heard the ring of hammers from the riverside, where carpenters were nailing together jousting barriers and raising a lofty viewing stand. A few new pavilions were going up as well, while the knights who had come earlier slept off last night's revels or sat to break their fasts. Dunk could smell wood smoke and bacon as well. To the north of the meadow flowed the River Cockleswent, a vassal stream to the mighty Mander. Beyond the shallow ford lay town and castle. Dunk had seen many a market town during his journeys with the old man. This was prettier than most. The whitewashed houses with their thatched roofs had an inviting aspect to them. When he was smaller, he used to wonder what it would be like to live in such a place, to sleep every night with a roof over your head, and wake every morning with the same walls wrapped around you.
It may be that soon I'll know. I and Egg, too. It could happen. Stranger things happen every day.
Ashford Castle was a stone structure built in the shape of a triangle, with round towers rising 30 feet tall at each point and thick crenellated walls running between. Orange banners flew from its battlements, displaying the white sun and chevron sigil of its lord. Men-at-arms in orange and white livery stood outside the gates with halberds, watching people come and go, seemingly more intent on joking with a pretty milkmaid than in keeping anyone out. Dunk reined up in front of the short, bearded man he took for their captain and asked for the master of the games.
It's Plummer you want. He's steward here. I'll show you.
Inside the yard, a stable boy took Sweetfoot for him. Dunk slung Sir Arlen's battered shield over a shoulder and followed the guard's captain back of the stables to a turret built into an angle of the curtain wall. Steep stone steps led up to the wall walk.
Come to enter your master's name for the lists?
The captain asked as they climbed.
It's my own name I'll be putting in.
Is it now?
Was the man smirking? Dunk was not certain.
That door there. I'll leave you to it and get back to my post.
When Dunk pushed open the door, the steward was sitting at a trestle table, scratching on a piece of parchment with a quill. He had thinning gray hair and a narrow, pinched face.
Yes,
he said, looking up.
What do you want, man?
Dunk pulled shut the door.
Are you Plummer the steward? I came for the tourney, to enter the lists.
Plummer pursed his lips.
My lord's tourney is a contest for knights. Are you a knight?
He nodded, wondering if his ears were red.
A knight with a name, mayhaps?
Dunk.
Why had he said that?
Sir Duncan the Tall.
And where might you be from, Sir Duncan the Tall?
Every place. I was squire to Sir Arlen of Pennytree since I was 5 or 6. This is his shield.
He showed it to the steward.
He was coming to the tourney, but he caught a chill and died, so I came in his stead. He knighted me before he passed, with his own sword.
Dunk drew the long sword and laid it on the scarred wooden table between them. The master of the lists gave the blade no more than a glance.
A sword it is, for a certainty. I have never heard of this Arlen of Pennytree, however. You were his squire, you say?
He always said he meant for me to be a knight, as he was. When he was dying, he called for his long sword and bade me kneel. He touched me once on my right shoulder, and once on my left, and he said some words, and when I got up, he said I was a knight.
Hmph. The man plumber rubbed his nose. Any knight can make a knight, it is true, though it is more customary to stand a vigil and be anointed by a septon before taking your vows. Were there any witnesses to your dubbing?
Only a robin up in a thorn tree. I heard it as the old man was saying the words. He charged me to be a good knight and true, to obey the seven gods, defend the weak and innocent, serve my lord faithfully, and defend the realm with all my might. And I swore that I would.
No doubt.
Plummer did not deign to call him sir. Dunk could not help but notice.
I shall need to consult with Lord Ashford. Will you or your late master be known to any of the good knights here assembled?
Dunk thought a moment.
There was a pavilion flying the banner of House Dundarian, the black with purple lightning.
That would be Sir Manfred, of that house.
Sir Arlen served his lord father in Dawn. 3 years past. Sir Manfred might remember me.
I would advise you speak to him. If he would vouch for you, bring him here with you on the morrow, at this same time.
As you say, my lord.
He started for the door.
Sir Duncan,
the steward called after him. Dunk turned back.
You are aware, the man said, that those vanquished in Tourney forfeit their arms, armor, and horse to the victors, and must needs ransom them back.
I know.
And do you have the coin to pay such ransom?
Now he knew his ears were red.
I won't have need of coin,
he said, praying it was true.
All I need is one victory. If I win my first tilt, I'll have the loser's armor and horse, or his gold, and I can stand a loss myself.
He walked slowly down the steps, reluctant to get on with what he must do next. In the yard, he collared one of the stable boys.
I must speak with Lord Ashford's master of horse.
I'll find him for you.
It was cool and dim in the stables. An unruly gray stallion snapped at him as he passed, but Sweetfoot only whickered softly and nuzzled his hand when he raised it to her nose.
You're a good girl, aren't you?
He murmured. The old man always said that a knight should never love a horse, since more than a few were like to die under him. But he never heeded his own counsel either. Dunk had often seen him spend his last copper on an apple for Old Chestnut, or some oats for Sweetfoot and Thunder. The palfrey had been Sir Arlen's riding horse, and she had borne him tirelessly over thousands of miles, all up and down the Seven Kingdoms. Dunk felt as though he were betraying an old friend. But what choice did he have? Chestnut was too old to be worth much of anything, and Thunder must carry him in the lists. Some time passed before the master of horse deigned to appear. As he waited, Dunk heard a blare of trumpets from the walls, and a voice in the yard. Curious, he led Sweetfoot to the stable door to see what was happening. A large party of knights and mounted archers poured through the gates, 100 men at least, riding some of the most splendid horses that Dunk had ever seen.
Some great lord has come.
He grabbed the arm of a stable boy as he ran past.
Who are they?
The boy looked at him queerly.
Can't you see the banners?
He wrenched free and hurried off.
The banners!
As Dunk turned his head, a gust of wind lifted the black silk pennon atop the tall staff, and the fierce three-headed dragon of House Targaryen seemed to spread its wings, breathing scarlet fire. The banner-bearer was a tall knight in white scale armor chased with gold, a pure white cloak streaming from his shoulders. Two of the other riders were armored in white from head to heel as well.
Kingsguard knights with the royal banner.
Small wonder Lord Ashford and his sons came hurrying out the doors of the keep, and the fair maid too, a short girl with yellow hair and a round pink face.
She does not seem so fair to me,
Dunk thought. The puppet girl was prettier.
Boy, let go of that nag and see to my horse.
The rider had dismounted in front of the stables.
He is talking to me,
Dunk realized.
I am not a stable boy, my lord.
not clever enough?
The speaker wore a black cloak bordered in scarlet satin, but underneath was raiment bright as flame, all reds and yellows and golds. Slim and straight as a dirk, though only of middling height, he was near Dunk's own age. Curls of silver-gold hair framed a face sculpted and imperious, high brow and sharp cheekbones, straight nose, pale smooth skin without blemish. His eyes were a deep violet color.
If you cannot manage a horse, fetch me some wine and a pretty wench.
I am no serving man either. I have the honor to be a knight.
Knighthood has fallen on sad days, said the princeling.
But then one of the stable boys came rushing up, and he turned away to hand him the reins of his palfrey, a splendid blood bay. Dunk was forgotten in an instant. Relieved, he slunk back inside the stables to wait for the master of horse. He felt ill at ease enough around the lords in their pavilions. He had no business speaking to princes. That the beautiful stripling was a prince, he had no doubt. The Targaryens were the blood of lost Valyria across the seas, and their silver-gold hair and violet eyes set them apart from common men. Dunk knew Prince Baelor was older, but the youth might well have been one of his sons. Valar, who was often called the young prince, to set him apart from his father, or Matarys, the even younger prince, as old Lord Swan's fool had named him once. There were other princelings as well, cousins to Valar and Matarys. Good King Daron had 4 grown sons, 3 with sons of their own. The line of the Dragon Kings had almost died out during his father's day, but it was commonly said that Daron II and his sons had left it secure for all time.
You, man, you asked for me?
Lord Ashford's master of horse had a red face made redder by his orange livery, and a brusque manner of speaking.
What is it? I have no time for—
I want to sell this palfrey, Dunk broke in quickly, before the man could dismiss him. She's a good horse, sure of foot.
I've no time, I tell you.
The man gave Sweetfoot no more than a glance.
My lord of Ashford has no need of such. Take her to the town, and perhaps Henley will give you a silver or 3.
That quick, he was turning away.
Thank you, my lord, Dunk said before he could go. My lord, has the king come?
The master of horse laughed at him.
No, thank the gods. This infestation of princes is trial enough. Where am I going to find the stalls for all these animals? And fodder?
He strode off shouting at his stable boys. By the time Dunk left the stable, Lord Ashford had escorted his princely guests into the hall, but 2 of the Kingsguard knights in their white armor and snowy cloaks still lingered in the yard, talking with the captain of the guard. Dunk halted before them.
My lords, I am Sir Duncan the Tall.
Well met, Sir Duncan, answered the bigger of the white knights. I am Sir Roland Crakehall, and this is my sworn brother, Sir Donald of Duskendale.
The 7 champions of the Kingsguard were the most puissant warriors in all the 7 kingdoms, saving only, perhaps, the crown prince, Baelor Breakspear, himself.
Have you come to enter the lists?
Dunk asked anxiously.
It would not be fitting for us to ride against those we are sworn to protect, answered Sir Donald, red of hair and beard. Prince Valar has the honor to be one of Lady Ashford's champions, explained Sir Roland, and 2 of his cousins mean to challenge. The rest of us have come only to watch.
Relieved, Dunk thanked the White Knights for their kindness and rode out through the castle gates before another prince should think to accost him.
3 princelings, he pondered as he turned the palfrey toward the streets of Ashford Town.
Valar was the eldest son of Prince Baelor, 2nd in line to the Iron Throne, but Dunk did not know how much of his father's fabled prowess with lance and sword he might have inherited. About the other Targaryen princes, he knew even less.
What will I do if I have to ride against a prince? Will I even be allowed to challenge one so highborn?
He did not know the answer. The old man had often said he was thick as a castle wall, and just now he felt it. Henley liked the look of Sweetfoot well enough until he heard Dunk wanted to sell her. Then all the stableman could see in her were faults. He offered 300 silvers. Dunk said he must have 3,000. After much arguing and cursing, they settled at 750 silver stags. That was a deal closer to Henley's starting price than to Dunk's, which made him feel the loser in the tilt. But the stableman would go no higher, so in the end, he had no choice but to yield. A second argument began when Dunk declared that the price did not include the saddle, and Henley insisted that it had. Finally, it was all settled. As Henley left to fetch his coin, Dunk stroked Sweetfoot's mane and told her to be brave. "If I win, I'll come back and buy you again, I promise." He had no doubt that all the palfrey's flaws would vanish in the intervening days, and she would be worth twice what she was today. The stableman gave him 3 gold pieces and the rest in silver. Dunk bit one of the gold coins and smiled. He had never tasted gold before, nor handled it. Dragons, men call the coins, since they were stamped with the 3-headed dragon of House Targaryen on one side. The other bore the likeness of the king. 2 of the coins Henley gave him had King Daron's face. The 3rd was older, well-worn, and showed a different man. His name was there under his head, but Dunk could not read the letters. Gold had been shaved off its edges, too, he saw. He pointed this out to Henley, and loudly. The stableman grumbled, but handed over another few silvers and a fistful of coppers to make up the weight. Dunk handed a few of the coppers right back and nodded at Sweetfoot. "That's for her," he said. "See that she has some oats tonight. Aye, and an apple too." With the shield on his arm and the sack of old armor slung over his shoulder, Dunk set out on foot through the sunny streets of Ashford Town. The heft of all that coin in his pouch made him feel queer, almost giddy on one hand and anxious on the other. The old man had never trusted him with more than a coin or two at a time. He could live a year on this much money.
"And what will I do when it's gone? Sell Thunder?"
That road ended in beggary or outlawry.
"This chance will never come again. I must risk all."
By the time he splashed back across the ford to the south bank of the Cockleswent, the morning was almost done and the tourney grounds had come to life once more. The wine sellers and sausage makers were doing a brisk trade. A dancing bear was shuffling along to his master's playing as a singer sang the bear, and the maiden fair. Jugglers were juggling, and the puppeteers were just finishing another fight. Dunk stopped to watch the wooden dragon slain. When the puppet knight cut its head off and the red sawdust spilled out onto the grass, he laughed aloud and threw the girl 2 coppers.
"One for last night," he called.
She caught the coins in the air and threw him back a smile as sweet as any he had ever seen.
"Is it me she smiles at, or the coins?"
Dunk had never been with a girl, and they made him nervous. Once 3 years passed, when the old man's purse was full after 1/2 a year in the service of blind Lord Florent, he'd told Dunk the time had come to take him to a brothel and make him a man. He'd been drunk, though, and when he was sober, he did not remember. Dunk had been too embarrassed to remind him. He was not certain he wanted a whore anyway. If he could not have a high-born maiden like a proper knight, he wanted one who at least liked him more than his silver.
"Will you drink a horn of ale?"
he asked the puppet girl as she was scooping the sawdust blood back into her dragon.
"With me, I mean. Or a sausage? I had a sausage last night, and it was good. They're made with pork, I think." "I thank you, my lord, but we have another show."
The girl rose and ran off to the fierce, fat Dornish woman who worked the puppet knight while Dunk stood there feeling stupid. He liked the way she ran, though.
"A pretty girl and tall. I would not have to kneel to kiss that one."
He knew how to kiss. A tavern girl had showed him one night in Lannisport 1 year ago. But she'd been so short, she had to sit on the table to reach his lips. The memory made his ears burn. What a great fool he was. It was jousting he should be thinking about, not kissing. Lord Ashford's carpenters were whitewashing the waist-high wooden barriers that would separate the jousters. Dunk watched them work a while, There were 5 lanes, arrayed north to south, so none of the competitors would ride with the sun in his eyes. A 3-tiered viewing stand had been raised on the eastern side of the lists, with an orange canopy to shield the lords and ladies from rain and sun. Most would sit on benches, but 4 high-backed chairs had been erected in the center of the platform for Lord Ashford, the fair maid, and the visiting princes. On the eastern verge of the meadow, a quinton had been set up and 12 knights were tilting at it, sending the pole arms spinning every time they struck the splintered shield suspended from one end. Dunk watched the brute of Bracken take his turn, and then Lord Caron of the Marches.
"I do not have as good a seat as any of them," he thought uneasily.
Elsewhere, men were training afoot, going at each other with wooden swords, while their squires stood shouting ribald advice. Dunk watched a stocky youth try to hold off a muscular knight, who seemed lithe and quick as a mountain cat. Both had the red apple of the Fossaways painted on their shields, but the younger man's was soon hacked and chipped to pieces.
"Here's an apple that's not ripe yet," the older said as he slammed the other's helm.
The younger Fossaway was bruised and bloody by the time he yielded, but his foe was hardly winded. He raised his visor, looked about, saw Dunk, and said,
"You there! Yes, you, the big one. Knight of the Winged Chalice. Is that a long sword you wear?"
"It is mine by rights," Dunk said defensively.
"I am Sir Duncan the Tall."
"And I, Sir Stephen Fossaway. Would you care to try me, Sir Duncan the Tall? It would be good to have someone new to cross swords with. My cousin's not ripe yet, as you've seen."
"Do it, Sir Duncan,"
urged the beaten Fossaway as he removed his helm.
"I may not be ripe, but my good cousin's rotten to the core. Knock the seeds out of him."
Dunk shook his head. Why were these lordlings involving him in their quarrel? He wanted no part of it.
"I thank you, sir, but I have matters to attend."
He was uncomfortable carrying so much coin. The sooner he paid Steely Pate and got his armor, the happier he would be. Sir Stephen looked at him scornfully.
"The hedge knight has matters."
He glanced about and found another likely opponent loitering nearby.
"Sir Grants, well met. Come try me. I know every feeble trick my cousin Raymond has mastered, and it seems that Sir Duncan needs to return to the hedges. Come, come."
Dunk stalked away red-faced. He did not have many tricks himself, feeble or otherwise, and he did not want anyone to see him fight until the tourney. The old man always said that the better you knew your foe, the easier it was to best him. Knights like Sir Stephen had sharp eyes to find a man's weakness at a glance. Dunk was strong and quick, and his weight and reach were in his favor, but he did not believe for a moment that his skills were the equal of these others. Sir Arlen had taught him as best he could, but the old man had never been the greatest of knights, even when young. Great knights did not live their lives in the hedges, or die by the side of a muddy road.
"That will not happen to me," Dunk vowed. "I will show them that I can be more than a hedge knight."
"Sir Duncan,"
the younger Fossaway hurried to catch him,
"I should not have urged you to try my cousin. I was angry with his arrogance, and you're so large, I thought. Well, it was wrong of me. You wear no armor. He would have broken your hand if he could, or knee. He likes to batter men in the training yard so they will be bruised and vulnerable later, should he meet them in the lists."
"He did not break you?"
"No, but I am his own blood, though his is the senior branch of the apple tree, as he never ceases to remind me. I am Raymond Fossaway."
"Well met. Will you and your cousin ride in the tourney?"
"He will, for a certainty. As to me, would that I could. I am only a squire as yet. My cousin has promised to knight me, but insists that I am not ripe yet."
Raymond had a square face, a pug nose, and short woolly hair, but his smile was engaging.
"You have the look of a challenger, it seems to me. Whose shield do you mean to strike?"
"It makes no difference," said Dunk.
That was what you were supposed to say, though it made all the difference in the world.
"I will not enter the lists until the third day."
and by then some of the champions will have fallen, yes?
Raymond said.
Well, may the warrior smile on you, sir. And you?
If he is only a squire, what business do I have being a knight? One of us is a fool. The silver in Dunk's pouch clinked with every step, but he could lose it all in a heartbeat, he knew. Even the rules of this tourney worked against him, making it very unlikely that he would face a green or feeble foe. There were a dozen different forms a tourney might follow, according to the whim of the lord who hosted it. Some were mock battles between teams of knights. Others, wild melees where the glory went to the last fighter left standing, where individual combats were the rule. Pairings were sometimes determined by lot, and sometimes by the master of the games. Lord Ashford was staging this tourney to celebrate his daughter's 13th name day. The fair maid would sit by her father's side as the reigning queen of love and beauty. Five champions wearing her favors would defend her. All others must perforce be challengers. But any man who could defeat one of the champions would take his place and stand as a champion himself, until such time as another challenger unseated him. At the end of the 3 days of jousting, the five who remained would determine whether the fair maid would retain the crown of love and beauty, or whether another would wear it in her place. Dunk stared at the grassy lists and the empty chairs on the viewing stand and pondered his chances. One victory was all he needed. Then he could name himself one of the champions of Ashford Meadow, if only for an hour. The old man had lived nigh on 60 years and had never been a champion. It is not too much to hope for if the gods are good. He thought back on all the songs he had heard, songs of blind Simeon Star Eyes and noble Serwin of the Mirror Shield, of Prince Aemon the Dragon Knight, Sir Ryam Redwine, and Florian the Fool. They had all won victories against foes far more terrible than any he would face. But they were great heroes, brave men of noble birth, except for Florian. And what am I? Dunk of Fleabottom? Or Sir Duncan the Tall? He supposed he would learn the truth of that soon enough. He hefted the sack of armor and turned his feet toward the merchant's stalls in search of Steely Pate.
6 days later, the rain was just a memory. Dunk had stripped off his tunic to enjoy the warmth of sunlight on his skin. When a light breeze came up, cool and fresh and fragrant as a maiden's breath, he sighed. "Water," he announced. "Smell it? The lake can't be far now."
"All I can smell is Maester, sir. He stinks."
Egg gave the mule's lead a savage tug. Maester had stopped to crop at the grass beside the road, as he did from time to time. "There's an old inn by the lake shore." Dunk had stopped there once when he was squiring for the old man. "Sir Arlen said they brewed a fine brown ale. Might be we could have a taste while we waited for the ferry." Egg gave him a hopeful look.
"To wash the food down, sir?"
"What food would that be?"
"A slice off the roast," the boy said. "A bit of duck? A bowl of stew? Whatever they have, sir."
Their last hot meal had been 3 days ago. Since then, they had been living on windfalls and strips of old salt beef as hard as wood. It would be good to put some real food in our bellies before we started north. That wall's a long way off.
"We could spend the night as well," suggested Egg.
"Does my lord want a feather bed?"
"Straw will serve me well enough, sir," said Egg, offended.
"We have no coin for beds."
"We have 22 pennies, 3 stars, 1 stag, and that old chipped garnet, sir."
Dunk scratched at his ear. "I thought we had 2 silvers.
"We did, until you bought the tent. Now we have the one."
"We won't have any if we start sleeping at inns. You want to share a bed with some peddler and wake up with his fleas?" Dunk snorted. "Not me. I have my own fleas, and they are not fond of strangers. We'll sleep beneath the stars."
"The stars are good," Egg allowed, "but the ground is hard, sir, and sometimes it's nice to have a pillow for your head."
Pillows are for princes. Egg was as good a squire as a knight could want, but every so often he would get to feeling princely. The lad has dragon blood, never forget. Dunk had beggar's blood himself, or so they used to tell him back in Flea Bottom, when they weren't telling him that he was sure to hang. Might be we can afford some ale and a hot supper, but I'm not wasting good coin on a bed. We need to save our pennies for the ferryman. The last time he had crossed the lake, the ferry cost only a few coppers, but that had been 6 years ago, or maybe seven. Everything had grown more costly since then.
Well, said Egg, we could use my boot to get across.
We could, said Dunk, but we won't. Using the boot was dangerous. Word would spread. Word always spreads. His squire was not bald by chance. Egg had the purple eyes of old Valyria and hair that shone like beaten gold and strands of silver woven together. He might as well wear a three-headed dragon as a brooch as let that hair grow out. These were perilous times in Westeros, and, well, it was best to take no chances. Another word about your bloody boot, and I'll clout you in the ears so hard you'll fly across the lake.
I'd sooner swim, Sare.
Egg swam well, and Dunk did not. The boy turned in the saddle.
Sare, someone's coming up the road behind us. Hear the horses?
I'm not deaf. Dunk could see their dust as well. A large party, and in haste.
Do you think they might be outlaws, Sare?
Egg raised up in the stirrups, more eager than afraid. The boy was like that. Outlaws would be quieter. Only lords make so much noise. Dunk rattled his sword hilt to loosen the blade in its scabbard. Still, we'll get off the road and let them pass. There are lords and lords. It never hurt to be a little wary. The roads were not so safe as when good King Daron sat the Iron Throne. He and Egg concealed themselves behind a thorn bush. Dunk unslung his shield and slipped it onto his arm. It was an old thing, tall and heavy, kite-shaped, made of pine and rimmed with iron. He had bought it in Stony Sept to replace the shield the Long Inch had hacked to splinters when they fought. Dunk had not had time to have it painted with his elm and shooting star, so it still bore the arms of its last owner, a hanged man swinging grim and gray beneath a gallows tree. It was not a sigil that he would have chosen for himself, but the shield had come cheap. The first riders galloped past within moments, two young lordlings mounted on a pair of coursers. The one on the bay wore an open-faced helm of gilded steel with three tall feathered plumes, one white, one red, one gold. Matching plumes adorned his horse's crinet. The black stallion beside him was barbed in blue and gold. His trappings rippled with the wind of his passage as he thundered past. Side by side, the riders streaked on by, whooping and laughing, their long cloaks streaming behind. A third lord followed more sedately at the head of a long column. There were two dozen in the party, grooms and cooks and serving men, all to attend three knights, plus men-at-arms and mounted crossbowmen, and a dozen drays heavy-laden with their armor, tents, and provisions. Slung from the lord's saddle was his shield, dark orange and charged with three black castles. Dunk knew those arms, but from where? The lord who bore them was an older man, sour-mouthed and saturnine, with a close-cropped salt-and-pepper beard. He might have been at Ashford Meadow, Dunk thought, or maybe we served at his castle when I was squiring for Ser Arlen. The old hedge knight had done service at so many different keeps and castles through the years that Dunk could not recall the half of them. The lord reined up abruptly, scowling at the thorn bush.
You, in the bush, show yourself.
Behind him, two crossbowmen slipped quarrels into the notch. The rest continued on their way. Dunk stepped through the tall grass, his shield upon his arm, his right hand resting on the pommel of his longsword. His face was a red-brown mask from the dust the horses had kicked up, and he was naked from the waist up. He looked a scruffy sight, he knew, though it was like to be the size of him that gave the other pause. "We want no quarrel, my lord. There's only the two of us, me and my squire." He beckoned Egg forward.
"Squire, do you claim to be a knight?"
Dunk did not like the way the man was looking at him. Those eyes could flay a man. It seemed prudent to remove his hand from his sword.
"I am a hedge knight seeking service." "Every robber knight I've ever hanged has said the same. Your device may be prophetic, sir, if sir you are. A gallows and a hanged man. These are your arms?"
"No, my lord. I need to have the shield repainted."
"Why, did you rob it off a corpse?"
"I bought it for good coin."
"Three castles, black on orange. Where have I seen those before?"
"I am no robber."
The lord's eyes were chips of flint.
"How did you come by that scar upon your cheek? A cut from a whip?"
"A dagger, though my face is none of your concern, my lord."
"I'll be the judge of what is my concern."
By then, the two younger knights had come trotting back to see what had delayed their party.
"There you are, Gormy," called the rider on the black,
a young man, lean and lithe, with a comely, clean-shaven face and fine features. Black hair fell shining to his collar. His doublet was made of dark blue silk edged in gold satin. Across his chest, an engrailed cross had been embroidered in gold thread, with a golden fiddle in the first and third quarters, a golden sword in the second and the fourth. His eyes caught the deep blue of his doublet and sparkled with amusement.
"Alan feared you'd fallen from your horse. A palpable excuse, it seems to me. I was about to leave him in my dust."
"Who are these two brigands?" asked the rider on the bay. Egg bristled at the insult.
"You have no call to name us brigands, my lord. When we saw your dust, we thought you might be outlaws. That's the only reason that we hid. This is Sir Duncan the Tall, and I'm his squire."
The lordlings paid no more heed to that than they would have paid the croaking of a frog.
"I believe that is the largest lout I have ever seen," declared the Knight of Three Feathers.
He had a pudgy face beneath a head of curly hair the color of dark honey.
7 feet if he's an inch, I'd wager. What a mighty crash he'll make when he comes tumbling down."
Dunk felt color rising to his face. "You'd lose your wager," he thought. The last time he had been measured, Egg's brother, Eamon, pronounced him an inch shy of 7 feet.
"Is that your war horse, Sir Giant?" said the feathered lordling. "I suppose we could butcher it for the meat."
"Lord Alan oft forgets his courtesies," the black-haired knight said. "Please forgive his churlish words, sir. Alan, you will ask Sir Duncan for his pardon."
"If I must, will you forgive me, sir?"
He did not wait for a reply, but turned his bay about and trotted down the road. The other lingered.
"Are you bound for the wedding, sir?"
Something in his tone made Dunk want to tug his forelock. He resisted the impulse and said,
"We're for the ferry, my lord."
"As are we.
But the only lords hereabout are Gormy and that wastrel who just left us, Alan Cockshaw. I am a vagabond hedge knight like yourself. Sir John the Fiddler, I am called."
That was the sort of name a hedge knight might choose, but Dunk had never seen any hedge knight garbed or armed or mounted in such splendor.
"The Knight of the Golden Hedge," he thought.
"You know my name. My squire is called Egg."
"Well met, sir. Come ride with us to Whitewall's and break a few lances to help Lord Butterwell celebrate his new marriage. I'll wager you could give good account of yourself."
Dunk had not done any jousting since Ashford Meadow. "If I could win a few ransoms, we'd eat well on the ride north," he thought. But the lord with the three castles on his shield said,
"Sir Duncan needs to be about his journey, as do we."
John the Fiddler paid the older man no mind.
I would love to cross swords with you, sir. I've tried men of many lands and races, but never one your size. Was your father large as well?
I never knew my father, sir.
I am sad to hear it.
Mine own sire was taken from me too soon.
The fiddler turned to the Lord of the Three Castles.
We should ask Sir Duncan to join our jolly company. We do not need his sort.
Dunk was at a loss for words. Penniless hedge knights were not oft asked to ride with highborn lords.
I would have more in common with their servants.
Judging from the length of their column, Lord Cockshaw and the fiddler had brought grooms to tend their horses, cooks to feed them, squires to clean their armor, guards to defend them. Dunk had Egg.
His sword?
The fiddler laughed.
What sort is that? The big sort? Look at the size of him.
We want strong men. Young swords are worth more than old names, I've oft heard it said.
By fools, you know little and less about this man. He might be a brigand, or one of Lord Bloodraven's spies.
I am no man's spy, said Dunk, and my lord has no call to speak of me as if I were deaf or dead or down in Dorne.
Those flinty eyes considered him.
Down in Dorne would be a good place for you, sir. You have my leave to go there.
Pay him no mind, the fiddler said. He's a sour old soul. He suspects everyone. Gormy, I have a good feeling about this fellow. Sir Duncan, will you come with us to White Walls?
My lord, I...
How could he share a camp with such as these? Their serving men would raise their pavilions, their grooms would curry their horses, their cooks would serve them each a capon or a joint of beef, whilst Dunk and Egg gnawed on strips of hard salt beef.
I couldn't.
You see, said the Lord of the Three Castles, he knows his place, and it is not with us.
He turned his horse back toward the road.
By now Lord Cockshaw is half a league ahead.
I suppose I must chase him down again.
The fiddler gave Dunk an apologetic smile.
Perchance we'll meet again some day. I hope so. I should love to try my lance on you.
Dunk did not know what to say to that.
Good fortune in the lists, sir,
he finally managed, but by then Sir John had wheeled about to chase the column. The older lord rode after him. Dunk was glad to see his back. He had not liked his flinty eyes, nor Lord Allen's arrogance. The fiddler had been pleasant enough, but there was something odd about him as well.
Two fiddles and two swords, a cross engrailed, he said to Egg as they watched the dust of their departure.
What house is that? None, sir. I never saw that shield in any roll of arms.
Perhaps he is a hedge knight after all. Dunk had devised his own arms at Ashford Meadow when a puppeteer called Tansel Tootall asked him what he wanted painted on his shield. Was the older lord some kin to House Frey? The Freys bore castles on their shield, and their holdings were not far from here. Egg rolled his eyes.
The Frey arms are two blue towers connected by a bridge on a gray field. Those were three castles. Black on orange, sir. Did you see a bridge?
No. He just does that to annoy me.
And next time you roll your eyes at me, I'll clout you on the ear so hard they'll roll back into your head for good.
Egg looked chastened.
I never meant...
Never mind what you meant. Just tell me who he was.
Gorman Peak, the Lord of Starpike.
That's down in the Reach, isn't it? Does he really have three castles?
Only on his shield, sir. House Peak did hold three castles once, but two of them were lost.
How do you lose two castles?
You fight for the Black Dragon, sir.
Oh.
Dunk felt stupid. That again. For 200 years, the realm had been ruled by the descendants of Aegon the Conqueror and his sisters, who had made the Seven Kingdoms one and forged the Iron Throne. Their royal banners bore the three-headed dragon of House Targaryen, red on black. 16 years ago, a bastard son of King Aegon IV, named Daemon Blackfyre, had risen in revolt against his true-born brother. Daemon had used the three-headed dragon on his banners, too, but he reversed the colors, as many bastards did. His revolt had ended on the red grass field, where Daemon and his twin sons died beneath a rain of Lord Bloodraven's arrows. Those rebels who survived and bent the knee were pardoned, but some lost land, some titles, some gold. All gave hostages to ensure their future loyalty. Three castles, black on orange. I remember now. Ser Arlen never liked to talk about the red grass field, but once in his cups he told me how his sister's son had died. He could almost hear the old man's voice again, smell the wine upon his breath. Roger of Pennytree, that was his name. His head was smashed in by a mace wielded by a lord with three castles on his shield. Lord Gorman Peak. The old man never knew his name, or never wanted to. By that time, Lord Peak and John the Fiddler and their party were no more than a plume of red dust in the distance. It was 16 years ago. The Pretender died, and those who followed him were exiled or forgiven. Anyway, it has naught to do with me. For a while they rode along without talking, listening to the plaintive cries of birds. Half a league on, Dunk cleared his throat and said, "Butterwell," he said. "His lands are near?"
"On the far side of the lake, sir. Lord Butterwell was the master of coin when King Aegon sat the Iron Throne. King Daeron made him hand, but not for long. His arms are undy green and white and yellow, sir."
Aeg loved showing off his heraldry. "Is he a friend of your father?" Aeg made a face.
"My father never liked him. In the rebellion, Lord Butterwell's second son fought for the Pretender and his eldest for the king. That way he was certain to be on the winning side. Lord Butterwell didn't fight for anyone."
"Some might call that prudent."
"My father calls it craven."
"Aye, he would. Prince Maekar was a hard man, proud and full of scorn. We have to go by White Walls to reach the King's Road. Why not fill our bellies?"
Just the thought was enough to cause his guts to rumble.
"Might be that one of the wedding guests will need an escort back to his own seat."
"You said that we were going north."
"The wall has stood 8,000 years. It will last a while longer. It's 1,000 leagues from here to there, and we could do with some more silver in our purse."
Dunk was picturing himself atop Thunder, riding down that sour-faced old lord with the three castles on his shield.
That would be sweet.
"It was old Ser Arlen's squire who defeated you," I could tell him when he came to ransom back his arms and armor. "The boy who replaced the boy you killed."
The old man would like that. "You're not thinking of entering the lists, are you, Ser?"
"Might be it's time."
"It's not, Ser."
"Maybe it's time I gave you a good clout in the ear."
"I'd only need to win 2 tilts. If I could collect 2 ransoms and pay out only one, we'd eat like kings for a year.
If there was a melee, I might enter that."
Dunk's size and strength would serve him better in a melee than in the lists.
"It's not customary to have a melee at a marriage, sir."
"It's customary to have a feast, though. We have a long way to go. Why not set out with our bellies full for once?"
The Prophet. The Prophet was drowning men on Great Wyke when they came to tell him that the king was dead. It was a bleak, cold morning, and the sea was as leaden as the sky. The first 3 men had offered their lives to the drowned god fearlessly, but the 4th was weak in faith and began to struggle as his lungs cried out for air. Standing waist-deep in the surf, Aeron seized the naked boy by the shoulders and pushed his head back down as he tried to snatch a breath. "Have courage," he said. "We came from the sea, and to the sea we must return. open your mouth and drink deep of God's blessing. Fill your lungs with water that you may die and be reborn. It does no good to fight." Either the boy could not hear him with his head beneath the waves,